episode number 158 of We Talk Comics. I'm the Crown Prince of Charisma, Mo. I got the Chief Defender of the Faith, Brett.
We are Defenders of the Faith.
Well, you are.
Yes.
We got the Cub Reporter, K.
Hey, I'm the Reporters of Cub.
That's right, Keith. And we got the man with no nickname, Chris.
I got a beer in each hand and one hiding between my feet just in case this podcast goes long. So let's do this.
All right.
So we know who the lush of the podcast is. And we're going to talk. This is episode 158. It's called Burn After Reading because we're going to be talking about John Byrne. And we're not going to be talking about John Byrne the man because that is a completely different podcast. We're going to be
we're going to be talking about the good part of John Byrne, his work.
We're going to be celebrating the works of John Byrne, not talking about the controversial figure that it sometimes is John Byrne, maybe someday. But we're going to just celebrate the works of John Byrne because I don't know what you guys think. And maybe actually, I'll save this for the very end. Mini topic at the very end. Budget for time, Brett.
All right. Everybody now has 3 minutes to talk about their Byrne stories each so we can budget.
That's it. We've each been challenged to bring our four favorite Byrne stories. That could be a run. That could be a single issue. It could be a miniseries, whatever it is. It is our storyline within a series, our four favorite ones. And so everybody's going to get a chance to celebrate a little John Byrne. And Brett, we'll give you a chance to open up. What's the first one on your list?
Well, for me to choose this, I went through Byrne Robotics and went through his checklist, and there was a few things that I thought about, but I kind of threw out mostly because he didn't have that enough to do with it in my mind. But I'm starting out with a book that he only co-wrote from Marvel called The Pit. That's New Universe. It's their tie-in graphic novel. And I know that he wrote it with Mark Gruenwald and Sal Buscema did the art. But this book, for me, was, it was right on the top of my mind because I loved this book when I read it. And even though I had really no knowledge of the New Universe, I still thought this was an excellent book. And so, for me, I was going through and I'm like, it really stood out to me, and I had to choose it. So The Pit is my number one for John Byrne.
Now, Pit was like the last ditch effort, as I remember it, of the New Universe, right?
No.
Nope?
No, The Pit's essentially the halfway point of the New Universe.
Oh, okay.
The line was flagging but not failing after the first year, so they canceled half the titles and rebuilt the run at the line around much more solid creative teams.
Oh, that's when they canceled all my books, like Mark
Hazard.
Yes.
Okay. And they did the
Justice. White Event. Yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, long-time listeners know that the New Universe is one of my all-time favorites. I just finished rebuilding an entire set of it after having I've gotten rid of it, thinking that eventually it'd all be out in trade, and it seems the John Byrne Star Brand, which almost made my list, honestly, it was on my list until just hours before the podcast, and I replaced it with something else because it was close. The Pit is part of Byrne's run. He only did about 10 or 11 issues of the New Universe, but really set the tone for the whole rest of that line.
Yeah, this was the Pit was like he took over the Star Brand. It became the Star Brand from Star Brand, right? Because that was like the premier book.
Yeah.
But and by the way, if we get any noise in the background, it's because there's a major thunderstorm rolling through the city here, and I don't know if any of our mics will pick it up, but I do know my dog is already shaking in fear. But The Pit, basically, I always wanted to read this. I've never been able to find it. It's not on Marvel Unlimited. There's quite a bit of New Universe that is, but this isn't. It's one of those ones where I thought, this seems so intriguing, because basically, I think, doesn't the whole town of Pittsburgh get destroyed and really become like a pit? Isn't that
Yeah.
I've always wanted to read it.
It is about to be collected, actually. They're doing two trades that are ridiculously overpriced. They're the big Mondo Marvel trades, so they're $45 or something Canadian. But they're doing two to collect the entire Star Brand run. So the first volume covers all of the Jim Shooter stuff, and the second volume is the John Byrne run that includes the Pit in it.
Okay. Now we're already going late, so we're going to move on. Keith, your first pick.
Honestly, when you suggested this topic, Mo, I had three within seconds, and then I've spent the last week struggling with what that fourth slot would be. As I said, Starbrand was in that slot. The first one for me on the list, I've mentioned it on the show once or twice before. It is one, if not the top superhero story for me of all time. It's Fantastic Four 285, a story called Hero. It's a Secret Wars 2 tie-in. It was actually written to not be a Secret Wars 2 tie-in. And it's the story of a young boy who idolizes Johnny Storm and pours gasoline on himself. So it is Johnny Storm coming to terms with this boy having idolized him to that extent. So a very heartbreaking story, but also a story that tells you, that talks so much about what heroism means to people.
So spoiler alert, the boy does not become a hero?
He is not Human Torch Boy. After the end of Brett mentioned Burn Robotics. There is a note about this book on Burn Robotics that he did not write it as a Secret Wars 2 tie-in. They made him make it that. So it was originally written to have a, I think it was just a nurse. Not just a nurse. Nurses are very important. it was written to be a new character. It was written to be a civilian that was replaced by the Beyonder when this became a Secret Wars 2 tie-in.
It's a very touching book, actually. Loved it.
Well, Chris, let's do yours then here.
All right. I actually picked The Incredible Hulk 316. Just one issue. It's the only book on my list that is just a single issue story. And in this one, this is the issue I absolutely fell in love with the Hulk. In it, the Hulk is somehow discombobulated from Banner, and it's just the pure Hulk entity. He takes on the heavy hitters of the Marvel Universe. We're talking Hercules, Iron Man, Submariner, Wonder Man, all in a matter of five pages, one of the greatest battles we've ever seen in the Marvel Comics. Rubble everywhere, drawn, of course, by John Byrne himself, which is gorgeous. And in the midst of this issue, we also get a little retelling of the origin of She-Hulk, which, if you've read the original Kirby stuff, or not Kirby, sorry, Stan Lee stuff, it doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. The origin is a mess. He actually fixes it so it actually fits continuity proper. And last few pages, we get the introduction of the entire Hulkbuster squad, which I've never thought got enough credit. I love the Hulkbuster squad, but this book, I credit, it is the beginning of my Hulk run, which lasted about 200 issues. But that was the one for me that just, okay, I get this character. Sure, I watched the television show before, but now I understand them.
This is an awesome choice, Chris. I love the cover for this one. Like the four of them streaking from the sky towards him, you know, and he's like in the middle of the page, and then the four of them are dropping down on him basically. And yeah, the Hulkbusters, it's got Doc Samson at the end making a surprise kicking ass appearance. And you know, he only did like six issues in his first run, but I love those six issues with the Hulk there. And
no, and you set the tone because yeah. I mean, he left in six issues, and I think Al Middleton took over and he recreated this issue. Alan Middleton, I think his name was.
Al Milgram?
Milgram, yes, sorry. I'm not as familiar with his run, obviously. But he recreated the issue with all the Avengers, and it was good, but it wasn't as good as just the four Avengers taking him on.
Yeah, the only problem I had with this was that this was happening after issue 300. He'd been just the Hulk away from Bruce Banner for a while, and David Banner, whatever the hell you want to call him. But but he'd been away from him for a while, and in issue 300, he'd already fought like every hero in the universe. That was just the four heavy hitters minus Thor taking him on, but it was still a great issue. Great action. Like, I love that there's a scene in this book. I mean, obviously it's not one of mine and we're going on way too damn long, but there's a scene in this book where it shows like Doc Samson's like, you guys can't fight him because you'll destroy everything. And it shows the town that they were in. And like the whole thing's leveled from these five fighting. And he's like, the only way to stop him is one person and not have the damage that you guys would cause. The collateral damage is too much. So that's kind of his argument. It's really cool. I'll give mine here, and I'm a big fan of Danger Unlimited. So that's going to be the first pick on my pick. I think Danger Unlimited kind of Danger Unlimited, like superheroes introduced into a real world. You know, there's obviously some like along that time there was the idea of the mutations already existed with the X-Men. And you had you had Gen 13 and kind of some similarities there. But like his art style changed to some point. And I really think it was at the height during kind of that Next Man run. And the plot starting with the 2012 or 2112 one shot that was the prequel and leading through the first 30 issues. It was just this book is just wonderful character development, and like it's like that Morning Glories thing. Like it's just subplot after subplot after subplot, and I think it's a wonderful book. And first time that he was kind of free to just do his own thing without any editorial interference, and I thought he did a great job. Plus, he had one of the great letter columns of all time in it.
I'm gonna throw in here because
wait. At some point during that, you started talking about Next Men, and I got lost.
I was talking Next Men.
You started saying Danger Unlimited.
Yes.
Oh, did I?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah
you Next did. Men. Okay. Danger Unlimited is one on my list, so that's one of my four. That's probably... No, Next Men. I'm talking Next Men. I'm sorry.
I also had Next Men Volume 1 on my list.
Mo, did you pick Volume 1?
It's not really a volume one. Like it ends it's 2112, right? Then the zero issue, then it goes to 30. Then he has a break for like 15 years before he does them.
Yeah.
Then he does 9 issues, and then he does a 5 issue aftermath that's also part of it. So the 9 issues is volume 2, but the aftermath is volume 1, 40 through 45. Like it's this weird thing, but anyways, I've admittedly not even read those ones. I just know he did that. I've only read the 0 through 30, and so that's where my love is. But I will get to them all at some point.
I did quite specifically pick Volume 1 because I liked Volume 2, but I liked everything that came later, like the 15 years later, but it's not nearly the quality the Volume 1 is.
No, it isn't. It's nice to read it after you've read Volume 1, but Volume 1 stands up as a far superior work in my mind. I was so close to picking Next Men. I was really thinking, and if I had, I probably would have picked Danger Unlimited just to kind of, you know, get within the universe without specifically choosing Next Men, but yeah, it was close.
Well, what did you pick, Brett? What's another one?
Well, my next one is also from the Fantastic Four run. It's really, really close to where Keith chose. It's just before 281, where Sue Storm, Sue Richards, becomes Malice. That storyline, because in fairness,
the worst costume that he ever saw.
Oh yeah, it's a horrible costume. The reason that I chose
some S&M thing.
Yeah, it's a terrible costume with the ribs.
It's not her worst, like though.
No.
No, it isn't.
Not her worst, just his.
But the reason I chose it is because, you know, Sue Richards is my absolute favorite character in the Fantastic Four. And up until that point, she had generally been just written off as, you know, almost a damsel in distress. Like, Reed constantly had to tell her how to use her powers properly and, you know, what to do and that kind of thing. And so she kind of came into her
own. She's just a girl.
She is just a girl. Like, totally right. How did I miss that point?
Duh.
But yeah, she really came into her own with the Malice storyline, and I totally give John Byrne full credit for that, and that's why it's one of my favorites.
Keith, I guess it's your turn.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with one of my favorite Superman stories. I could have just done a whole list of Superman.
Yeah.
But I wanted to break it up a little bit. The most controversial story he ever had in Superman history, perhaps, the one he co-wrote with our pal Jerry Ordway, the Supergirl saga, which is Superman 21 and 22 and Adventures of Superman, I want to say 464, but I didn't look it up. It's a three-part story that ends John Byrne's run is about a alternate universe where the Kryptonians have killed everyone on the entire planet and Superman is left as the sole judge, jury, and executioner. Dun dun dun.
I feel like you can tell us everything, but I guess you don't want to give a spoiler alert to a book that's 25 years
also, we did like 20 minutes on the Jerry Ordway episode about this.
Well, Chris, let's just move on to you then, because nobody.
Oh, God, this is so hard because all three of you left little tangents for me to grab onto with my books. But I'm going to go with Superman here. And I actually, this is going to shock you. I actually picked the Superman book for this. And I picked Action Comics number 584 to 599. Now, this was in 1987 when they had just reintroduced Superman after Crisis and all that. And Byrne had an excellent run with Man of Steel and a couple other stories. But they relaunched Action with this. Action became a team-up book. So every issue is a single story that you team up with one other hero in the DC universe, and it's just told excellently. It's a good read. It easy to pick up stories, and if you want a good introduction to, like, say, the Metal Man or the Demon Etrigan or even the New Gods, hell, he has an issue where he teams up with Big Barda.
That's a great issue.
Yeah, it's fantastic. He teams up with the Green Lantern Corps in this. And it isn't fancy. It isn't like the grand scheme like we've been talking, but it's just good comics. It's world building, and that's what they needed that at that point at DC. And that's what this series did, and that's what Action Comics should do. It shouldn't be just a secondary Superman title. It should incorporate a larger universe, in my opinion. And that's what this book did. And it's just a good team-up book. And there's nothing better, and I think you guys would agree to a certain extent.
All right, I guess it's my turn. And unless Keith, you had something to say there?
There's a Booster Gold issue in there.
Yes, there is.
Well,
why did I let that opening happen?
A great cover, man.
It's Booster's second appearance outside of his own book, I think. I asked Dan Jurgens when he was on mentioned it. I think there's one other book that has a small, like, Booster's just in the background of something. So Byrne's only the third person to ever draw Booster. Makes it an important seminal issue right there.
I'm going to go with my second pick. I'm going to go with Next Men. Now, the thing about Danger and Lucy.
There you go.
The thing about Danger Unlimited is John Byrne at the time said, there's no question, this is there is a huge, like, everybody's talking about Fantastic Four, and he's well associated with Fantastic Four, right? And but in the early 90s, people asked him, what is Danger Unlimited? And his response was, well, nobody's doing Fantastic Four right now, so I thought I might as well. We talk about, maybe he's not the nicest guy all the time. I think it was the folk at the time he was actually doing Fantastic Four. But anyways, Danger Unlimited is just, it is the a great story. It takes place in the future and in the past at the same time. There's a, you know, great alien species called Zellery, with a Z, Zellery.
Oh, let's just call them Martian Attacks aliens and be done with it. They're awesome. Great, but they look very similar.
No, they don't. What are you talking about? You don't look a damn thing like them. Are you kidding? Not one thing. You're thinking of something else.
Okay.
You are definitely thinking of something else.
In that same book, though, because I reread it recently.
Are you thinking of Babe?
Sorry, I'm thinking of Babe. I reread that. Same universe. Never mind.
I can't. That was right.
I'm trying to think. Oh, what, God.
Yeah, Babe. But anyways,
I'm not the only one to forget the book we're talking about. So yeah, okay.
All I'm saying is, it's great. It's 1960s grand comic book adventure with modern storytelling techniques, and I think it's just wonderful.
Yeah, we're gaining 3 minutes here because I picked it on my list too. And just to say,
are you sure you didn't, Babe?
It's a phenomenal read, and I have to actually, it is a great value if you buy it digitally. It's $10 on Amazon right now, and you also get the 6 issues of Babe attached.
Oh, nice.
And Torch of Liberty.
Oh, and Torch, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that is for $10, you get Danger.
Can we pause the show for a minute?
So like, it's actually $11.99 digitally Canadian on Amazon where we're from, and wow. Yes, 280 pages. It's really great value.
All right, moving on.
I'll sell you a Danger Unlimited trade for $11.99. That doesn't have Babe in it.
Won't eat it. Brett, it's your turn.
All right. Well, I'm going to move over to DC. A lot of the stuff that I chose with Byrne is because when I was going through the list, these things struck me, especially as, you know, that I enjoyed in the early years of me collecting comic books. And this is one of those. It's a 4-issue miniseries that he did called OMAC. And for me, it was probably amongst my first introductions to any of the Kirby characters. I had no idea who OMAC was. And I just, you know, really dug the character, really dug the take on it. And, you know, it kind of made me a fan of Kirby before I knew who Kirby was. And unfortunately, now I've read the Fourth World, and that kind of made me less of a fan of Kirby. But thankfully, OMAC by John Byrne is always there to help bring me back a little bit. So I chose OMAC. It's a much easier read than Kirby's Fourth World stuff.
That's a great run. One of the first things he did that used the what was it called? Zip tone.
Oh yeah.
It ended up being was the style he used on Next Men for the whole first run as well. It was a
it was like an
inking method that that gave these really interesting tones to his work.
And not to mention one of the greatest credit pages in comics by John Byrne. No other credits. No one else worked on that book.
Yeah, a bit of trivia for the listeners, because now that we have tons of time. John Byrne is partially colorblind, and that's why he does, even on books where he does everything, he can't do the coloring. So the black and white books of his that exist, I found a lot of his stuff that is colored looks equally good in black and white. There's a bunch of the X-Men stuff, and the Next Men 0 to 30 have been collected in black and white as well. But yeah, the OMAC, because it is in black and white, can have that everything by John Byrne credit.
Yeah, that's right.
Here's a funny story, a sidebar on that. He apparently drew like 6 issues of Iron Fist, thinking that his costume was brown. before he found out it was green. Because those are like those muted colors you can't tell the difference between. So he thought he had a brown costume. Which, by the way, would have sucked. Chris, your next book.
All right. You know what? You guys aren't the only ones.
Chris, Keith, you never did get your book. You just gave trivia there.
Well, I'm down to my last book. So,
oh, are you?
Because I had also picked Next Men.
Oh yes,
that's right. Oh yeah. Okay, good. All right, good. I
told you this would be rough once we.
Good. No, it's not. So far, that's only like. Well, I guess there's two repeats so far, but this is good because like I say, I got a little mini topic at the end. And so, like right. Hell, this is John Byrne we're talking about. I mean, this is a guy who in August of 1980 co-plotted and drew Captain America with Roger Stern, co-plotted and drew it, plotted and drew Fantastic Four, and co-plotted and drew an X-Men with Chris Claremont all in the same month. And the guy's unbelievable. Like, all legendary runs. Like, that's unbelievable.
Well, I'll drop mine here. In that legendary run, I wanted to stick to stuff that he had at least it isn't my turn anymore?
No.
All right. Well,
I was just throwing that out there.
Who needs to go then?
Chris's turn.
All right.
It's also my last book, but I also picked up.
What are you talking about? You did. You did add
Danger. Danger Unlimited, yeah.
My turn. I guess it's Mo's turn now.
Awesome.
Bites us in the ass.
I'm going with Green Lantern Ganthet's Tale. I'm going Ganthet's Tale. He wrote that with, co-wrote that with, I think it was Larry Niven, who's the author from the Ringworld series. I've never read his stuff, but I played the Ringworld adventure game for the PC, and that was fantastic. Hilarious. But I've always wanted to read Ringworld. But yeah, I mean, he did the script and did the pencils, and I love it because until then, that was the first time that the Guardians of the Universe had ever, I almost called them Guardians of the Galaxy. The Guardians of the Universe had ever really been, any of them had ever been humanized. And Ganthet was such a likable character. So you were so relatable. And then the history that they went through was so good. And the art is just like top notch. I love Ganthet's Tale. I think it was a prestige issue. I believe prestige issue, wasn't it? Wasn't a miniseries for Mercury.
No, it was a prestige format.
Prestige, yeah. Yes. It's been a long time since I read it, but it was just great. I loved it.
That was so close to my list right there.
Read it somehow again.
Well, and interesting how long that character continued to be used. Jeff Johns used him a ton.
Yeah. Well, when Kyle Rayner, he's the one who gave Kyle Rayner the ring. And so Rod Mars used him a lot too because he wanted to take back the ring from Rayner at first because he was like, because remember, he basically gave it to him and I think he said, "You'll have to do." Like, I think it was the line. And then afterwards, he kept trying to take it back from him until Kyle Rayner proved himself to it. So, yeah, I mean, but it's all based on this. This is where this character came from and he's still important.
No, it's a fantastic story. It was, it was just one of those cases for me. The reason that I took it off was because as I was quickly going through, I thought right away of that book, and then I looked and it was just like, it's Larry Niven's story. So I kind of pushed it off my list because I wanted to do something that John Byrne had kind of specifically written and created, but it's a great book.
Well, it's your choice, Brett. What did you pick over it? Your last.
Yeah, you know that's really the problem is that there's so damn much. But I think I'm gonna have to go back to the. I really was so close to choosing the original Superman run. What's the Man of Steel 6-issue miniseries? Because I think that's just fantastic work. And again, the thing that kind of reintroduced me to Superman, but what I'm going to have to choose in its stead is Legends from DC, the miniseries. I know that, it's a John Ostrander written for the first one, but John Byrne's art was just so awesome in it. And I just love the miniseries so much.
you know, Gambit's tale, though, you decided wasn't enough John Byrne.
So
something he didn't even co-plot.
That's right. No, that was mostly because it just popped up for me, and I just have such a, you know, huge love of Legends that it was just like, oh, fine, it's gonna be Legends. Damn it. Next Men. Did I say next? I said Next Men, right?
You said Next Men.
Legends did come close to my list, and it didn't make it to the list, but it did get me to pull it off the shelf and put it onto my reading pile for the next couple of days.
There's been a ton thrown on my reading pile because of this podcast. That's before you guys mentioned all these great books.
It just got recollected because, of course, Suicide Squad and Amanda Waller first appear in Legends. There's a new edition of the trade just came out.
You know, Legends, unfortunately for me, the problem with it is, and it's not that it isn't, but it was compared to, for me, to Crisis, you know, and you can't, but it was the big crossover after, right? So I was comparing it to Crisis, which probably wasn't fair. I should go back and give it another try, give it a read. Hell, it's sitting here on my bookshelf.
You know, for me, I thought that, you know, because this was the first really big crossover. I came into reading comics just after Crisis, and this was the first really big crossover that I was kind of reading during. And for me, it struck me as such a strong crossover because I always understood which book I was going to read next. I always kind of, you know, was able to get through whether you got all the crossovers or didn't get all the crossovers. It didn't matter that much. And so for me, it still sits right near the top of how you do a crossover well, a lesson that, you know, some other companies could learn, you know, at this point in their careers.
Hey, you can never have too much dark side.
It is one of the only crossovers that ever did a chapter number on the cover.
Yeah.
That it's not like, I mean, Millennium did weeks. Others did just, it's a tie-in or it's a, or it's et cetera, but Legends actually has chapter numbers.
And then in some of the cases, it was like an add-on where you could throw it in. You didn't have to throw it in. Yeah. I mean, it made it so much easier to collect the entire thing.
Yeah, no, that would have been on my list if it was the John Ostrander show, though.
Maybe we'll do that next. I can think of a good Ostrander.
Someone's telegraphing what next week's topic is.
Well, Keith, it is your final choice. Don't blow it.
All right. Well, I went back and forth on books that that he did the art on or that he co-plotted. I decided to go with one that he co-plotted. Perhaps the best X-Men, second best X-Men story of his run, though I think it's a tighter story, Days of Future Past. Dark Phoenix, I think, would have been a stronger work with a stronger ending. They had a compromised ending. Days of Future Past at two issues is a really tight story. It's the end of the two of them working together. They did not leave on great terms when Byrne.
What?
But it was the two of them.
They worked together again on X-Men many years later, and they worked on JLA together.
It did indeed. Most of the animosity at that time was really based on. Byrne was ready to write his own stuff, and Phil Claremont was kind of holding back. And he was right. I mean, he went on to do Fantastic Four and so many other great runs soon after. So Days of Future Past is the X-Men pick that I thought I put in.
Well, when you go Dark Phoenix and that, you mentioned both of them. Both to this day have had, like, the influence on the X universe is still huge from both of those stories. Like, they're both legendary stories.
And the movie universe is now too.
And the movie universe. Yeah. I mean, either one of them would have been an excellent choice, obviously. Chris, tell me you chose Dark Phoenix, please. Just
Wheelie and the Chopper Punch. Wheelie and the Chopper Punch.
is no one picking FX?
I love that. See, he said, I'll do a comic book for anybody who would want for if they pay me $20,000 an issue. Some guy actually ponied up. Some guy who'd never done comics before ponied up and got him to. I'm like, dude, if I could come up with $120,000 to do a, for him to do a six issues too, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I imagine he lost money on it still, but I mean, that was amazing. Nobody does that. What is that page rate? What does that work out to? 20,000 for?
It's probably a 20-page book.
Yeah.
It'd be a 20 or 22-page book. Yeah, so.
Yeah, intense.
I guess it's my turn. Last book, I picked Fantastic Four 242 to 244, just those three issues. The Terror of Terax the Tamer. Now, this admittedly
three times
early...
fast. Say that three times fast, Chris.
Yes. No, thank you. I barely said it once. an early in Burns run, Terax, one of my favorite Galactus heralds, comes to Earth, kidnaps all of New York City, takes it to space to basically blackmail New York's heroes, which includes basically everybody, to kill a weakened Galactus. They go to war, great battle. Galactus is knocked over for the first time, albeit it was by a fastball special that threw the thing, which is kind of stupid, but for the story, it works. Galactus is felled, and Reed Richards spends an issue reviving him and makes a bullshit reason that I know is bullshit now, but is written so well that you sort of go, oh, yeah, okay, they're heroes. They need to save Galactus. They save Galactus. It's a great story. Whole Marvel Universe is involved. Sue Richards gets her claim to fame because she saves all of New York by creating an air bubble as they travel through space. And not only is it a great story, it sets up another great story that happens about 20 issues later, the trial of Reed Richards. Just great Fantastic Four.
Comments, anybody? 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 No? Good. All right, move it on to me. And my last pick, first off, before I give this pick, I'd like to say, screw you, Keith. I'm picking The Thing, his entire run, 22-issue run on The Thing, Volume 1 from 1984. And the reason we say screw you, Keith, is because...
Because it has wrestling in it?
Well, no, that was not his run. That was Mike Carlin's run,
oh, okay.
23 to 36. So I'm not including that because that was not good.
Oh, that's... But after Burn, they have the Thunder Riders in it.
That's, yeah, and the Thunder Riders are
I'm awesome. Picking issues 1 through 3.
All right.
Burn doing The Thing. Why am I saying that?
I believe at some point I said, well, it's not like anyone's going to would have picked The Thing anyway, right?
Yeah, that was right. We were doing our little WhatsApp chat and you insulted it. And I was like, what the?
You know what? I knew you were going to choose The Thing.
Well, you have. Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about The Thing. All right. Here's the thing about The Thing. Damn it. I don't give a damn about. I don't like the Fantastic Four. I don't care about Sue Storm or Richards. I don't give a damn. Johnny Storm's all right, sort of. I don't like Mr. Fantastic. I could give a damn about that guy. I really don't like any of them. They're holding back the book for me. And so I get that book. I'm like, if I could just have some more Ben Grimm. Ben Grimm's the most popular one. That's why he got Marvel 2-in-1. He's the only one I really wanted anyways. I just don't care about the rest of them. They can have good stories. I just don't like them so much. I like Ben Grimm. I love Ben Grimm. I love The Thing. And nobody else has ever gotten The Thing right. Most people think if they just give him some bad grammar, and make him a little grumpy but funny, they've nailed the character. Not at all. John Byrne knew that this character is smart, maybe not educated, but smart and very deep and philosophical, and he nailed all that. And the first few issues, it sets up that he's always putting – Alicia Masters is in danger because of her relationship with him. So then Secret World comes, and there's two highlights in this run. Number one is the Space Ranger run, where he's on the Battle World, and he stays there after everybody else has left, because on there he can change back to Ben Grimm, and he spends the whole 12 issues trying to be Ben Grimm before coming to the grips with the fact that he really is now the Thing, and that's awesome. And the other highlight is issue number 7, called, I think it was called Twisted 2 Feet. And man, this is the, when I talk about the funniest stories of all time, it's Gru number 12, Gru meets the Thespians, it's Blue Devil number 2, and it's the Thing number 7. This was Assistant Editors Month, which is something Marvel used to do, where all the editors went for their group meetings and went out to Los Angeles, and the assistant editors were left in charge, and they kind of threw out lighter stories and that type of thing. And in this story, this is the greatest story of all time. Okay, this is probably the greatest comic book ever made. All right, it's the Thing number 7. Here's how it goes. All right, you guys ready? You guys know this one?
Is this your side topic?
Shut up. Do you guys know this story?
I'm enjoying this. Off the top of my head. Keep going.
All right, here we go. So it's the Thing, number 7. Okay, so the Thing opens up. He's visiting Alicia Masters in the hospital because she's being tortured by Annihilus, and that was over in the Fantastic Four. And so he leaves, and there's this robbery happening, and it's this guy, Goody Two-Shoes, right? And so the Thing has to stop him because he has super-powered atomic shoes that give him super strength and stuff. And he kicks the hell out of the Thing. He sends him flying, and the Thing has to fight for his life against this guy. This guy's got ridiculous speech. He was Swedish or Swiss or something.
I remember that now. Yep.
All this yodeling type of crap or something, like just this huge, incredibly politically incorrect accent and all these mispronunciations of these words. It was unbelievable. And he just fights him, and the Thing finally loses it. And he fights him, and he beats him, and he holds up his shoes, and he's talking about how he overcame despite the blood and the guts, and it's like the greatest fight of his life. And then you turn the page, and it's the Thing reading the same book you're reading, going, "What? That's not how it happened." So he goes down to Marvel offices, and he says he wants to see the writer, John Byrne. And he goes up, and it's Ron Wilson and Nascenti and John Byrne, who now has written himself as an asshole.
Imagine that.
He was really upset because the Thing is pissed off because the Thing basically beat this guy in 10 seconds. Just basically flicked him with one finger when the guy tried to kick him. And one of the funniest things ever, the guy goes to kick him, and it's just like the other scene, except for this time he goes to kick him and nothing happens. And then he just flicks him with one finger. And then he's laying there like, "Sit down, calm down, Ben, Mr. Grimm, calm down." And John Byrne's like, "Hey, you're sitting in my chair." And, you know, and all this stuff. And then they say, "Oh, well, we've got to produce a monthly book, and they expect these grand adventures." And John Byrne says, "Yeah, and it's not like your life is always that exciting anyways." And he's like, "Not that exciting? Not that exciting? I'll make it exciting." He closes the door, basically beats the hell out of all of them. It's awesome. I'm telling you. That was it. Comic Geek in 1984.
You know, I really like that run, and I was thinking about it, but I couldn't reread it because only 3 issues are available freaking digitally. And I don't think number 7 is one of them.
But this blew my mind at the time. The idea of fourth wall being broken, like, this was the first time I'd read this in a mainstream comic book, and it blew my mind.
But I did sample a whole bunch of fantastic stories to find some great ones. And the thing that fascinated me about John Byrne and the Thing, there's an evolution you can see in the way Byrne draws the Thing. Sometimes he's just bumpy, and then he evolves into a more rock-like structure. And it's consistent. It is a definite evolution across all the issues. I just think that kind of work is fascinating. And I'm hoping it was conscious, but it might not have been.
It might not. I'm not sure. All right, here's my side topic. And we got 2 because we got enough time here. We got like about 15 minutes, don't we, Brett?
Yep, more or less.
And we got 15 minutes, okay. So here's 2 side topics on this. Having gone through this now with John Byrne, what is it that you guys have each rediscovered that you appreciate about him? Brett, go ahead.
Well, for me, it's the fact that he tells stories in a way that we don't necessarily get a chance to see anymore. He's because he has that massive run on Fantastic Four, and he has a long, you know, or and he does so much with Superman, but he brought so much to the books by, you know, sprinkling little things in and then saving them for later, and he was able to save them for later. And I really was thinking that, you know, comics misses people like that now who are able to take a good long run and make it work and not just, you know, oh, I'm here, I'm gonna blow the hell out of everything for like 12 issues and then I'm gonna leave in a blaze of glory. Or what's worse is that they blow the hell out of everything for 12 issues and then that they've spent they've blown their load and they're done, and then the rest of their work for another 2 years is just like, oh yeah, that's great, you're just boring now. You know, John Byrne never had that. He was, you know, some of those runs are just incredible, and I think we miss that nowadays.
Keith?
I think the two things about his work that always strike me is he was exceptional at continuity. He played with continuity like no one before or since, because he was able to take those little fragments, those little asides and little plot inconsistencies, and then blow them up into giant stories, but at the same time didn't require that you knew all that stuff. You know, like when he came into West Coast Avengers is a perfect example. He came in and he wanted to do a long story with Scarlet Witch, and he wanted to bring back the original Human Torch, the android Human Torch. And up until that point, the story of the Vision was that the android Human Torch had been modified and made into the Vision. They were the same thing. And Byrne said, well, the only person that ever told us that was Ultron, and why would Ultron tell you the truth? So, no, they're not. And then he, within two issues, had the original Human Torch back and had Vision and had places to go with both of those characters, because he could just shuffle with continuity that way and make it fresh. And also, like as we talk about all these books, the amount of things he created in even short runs that continue to be used, things like Ganthet, thank you. Things from that West Coast Avengers run. The Supergirl saga was the core of Superman for years afterward. It was constantly referred back to. You know, all of those things, even Kilax, the robots that were on Krypton in Man of Steel, are in the Man of Steel film. Like those things continue to reverberate, you know, three decades later.
Chris, what do you appreciate?
Sorry, I had a little blip there.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, what did you appreciate, learn, or remember that you appreciate about him?
All right. Coincidentally, I'm just rereading. I had to stop rereading this to actually answer the call of this podcast. I'm rereading Vision Quest as well, which I'm greatly enjoying. And Keith is 100% right. The way Byrne just tinkers with continuity, he's able to pick the best stuff and make these disjointed origins. Like the Human Torch Vision origin is a mess. Until Byrne gets his hands on it and is okay, let's fix this and let's come up with plausible reasons that it could work, and it works perfectly in Vision Quest. I also have to say, I mean, Vision right now in Mark Waid's run that I think is in on issue 7 is playing with the same material right now. Vision once again is being emotionally wiped. It's great. It also, this story also sort of, to me, really points out how Byrne only uses the villains to actually move ahead the drama of the story. Vision Quest, which is a huge actual story, has two villains in it, and they each appear about four panels. It has Ultron for a panel, which gets the story in motion, and then the Avengers admittedly for like 8 issues bitch at each other. And then Kang shows up and they have to sort of reform a little bit, and Scarlet Witch gets a little bit hinky and they revive the Human Torch. But then Kang's gone, and it's not even the, like a real Kang. It's like some version of a Kang. But he, and all these stars that we've mentioned, there are villains in it, but it's mostly the drama between the heroes rather than a big fight. I mean, big fights happen, but they're never the center of the drama. Even my big fight book I picked, which was Hulk 316, more story there is focused on fixing She-Hulk than the actual fight. The fight that happens is awesome, but the story is incomplete without that emotional drama happening around it. So, yeah, I don't think he uses villains effectively, but he doesn't make them the focus of the story.
And I, what I appreciate in this, and I think the core of his Superman and his Fantastic Four, and a lot of people, when they come on a character, they come on a series or a run, I feel like they want to put their mark on it. They want to make sure people know that that's their Superman. That's their Fantastic Four. And I feel like he just took the characters and boils it down to what made them work in the first place and then goes to that. And it's not that major events don't happen, but that his thing is not about making it a John Byrne story. It's about making it the character story. And from there, it just grows organically. And I think that's the key. That's what I really appreciate about him. I think that's a major skill of his. Now, is there any books besides, obviously, we mentioned Dark Phoenix, and I think it is a huge surprise that wasn't picked. Any other books that's a surprise for you guys? I'll tell you, I'm surprised none of you picked the Sensational She-Hulk.
For me, I love the Sensational She-Hulk, but I think I didn't pick it because it's just plain funny, mm-hmm. And it doesn't have some of the emotional gravitas of these other stories. I mean, Keith's book has a kid lighting himself on fire. I would hardly compare She-Hulk going out shopping for dresses in the same same list. Although, comic books go, it's equally great, but...
I'm just surprised. I'm also surprised nobody picked Wonder Woman, to be honest with you.
I'm not a big fan of the Wonder Woman run.
Yeah, I don't like She-Hulk that much, and I don't I've read the run and it's got its moments, although it is too funny in this case for me. And Wonder Woman, yeah, I just never got into the overall run.
So I love the Wonder Woman run. I would have picked that as well, except I always think of it as, oh, Byrne had some leftover She-Hulk scripts.
So anything, you guys, anything?
No, but nobody's brought up any of his Star Trek work, his new Star Trek work. No.
And if you've read his photo Star Trek work, you'll realize why.
Oh, I like that stuff, Chris. Really?
I tried one volume and I didn't make it all the way through.
Oh, I like it.
I think most of us drifted away from the work that he hadn't at least co-plotted. Captain America, his run on Captain America with Roger Stern, I think is one that came close and really dropped off just because he wasn't the lead writer on it. So that was certainly one of the ones that was a potential for me.
No lab rats?
No lab rats. I don't know at what point – I mean his – I don't know his stuff. Either he's changed or he hasn't changed. I don't know which it is. I suspect it's that he hasn't changed, and that's the problem. His stuff. Next Men was kind of the peak where he had the most freedom. It was creator owned, and it would sell. And later on, his creator-owned stuff hasn't sold as well, and maybe that's given him a bit of restriction. Cold War would be the exception. Cold War is my favorite of his later work.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about that one too.
I actually always separate Byrne's work into two sections: before Danger Unlimited and after Danger Unlimited.
Oh man, 0 to 30 of Danger Unlimited. It's a great run.
yeah, it sure is. Volume one? Yep.
It's a terrific run.
I disagree, Chris. I go before Spider-Man year one. Was it year one or the
chapter,
Lost? Whatever,
chapter one.
Chapter one, before Spider-Man chapter one and after Spider-Man chapter one.
Really? I actually thought Danger Unlimited was the last book we wrote before Spider-Man chapter one. So.
No. Wonder Woman and stuff like that was after that. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so the last little mini topic here. We have only a couple minutes left. Right, Brett?
Oh, yeah. You better
get it. Last mini topic. Who would you say is, from between 1980 and 2000 then, the top overall creator in comics? Because I think John Byrne is definitely on the short list. Frank Miller's probably is. Alan Moore. Maybe Gaiman.
80 to 2000.
Like Morrison came about 85, 86, so he lost those first few years. Who would be the top guy?
Moore's probably the most influential, but it's not the largest body of work by far.
No.
Byrne has the numbers, and it's hard to discount Man of Steel.
Well, and like you said, Keith, I mean, Byrne did was in, like, the stuff that he introduced, the volume that he introduced, really helps push him towards that number one slot.
Yeah, he defined so many of these characters for so, like, I mean, many of them till today, there's still a lot of those characters that are still so much influenced by the work he did in the 80s and 90s.
And other than Chuck Dixon, I can't think of another comic book writer that, or comic book guy period, that's produced more work.
Oh, I can. But more than that, I think it comes down to, for me, Frank Miller or him are really the two, because they're both writer-artists.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, both have this huge influence. I mean, for me, it would be Byrne. But if somebody chose Frank Miller, I wouldn't argue it. But, yeah.
I think it's easy to forget how, I mean, because of the last excuse me.
Burrito.
Yeah. It's that thunder. It's that thunder that we were expecting.
I've been hearing lots of, I'm hearing the thunder here. It's pouring rain. I'm hoping the door was closed. I'm not sure it was. I'm not sure the patio door got closed.
Anyway, I have some cleanup.
You'll find soon enough.
You have a couple minutes. You have a couple minutes. That's the 3-minute warning. That's the 3-minute warning. Go ahead.
I honestly don't remember. How incredibly popular Byrne was at this peak in the 80s. I mean, there's rumor that he was paid $1 million a year to do Superman in 1986. They bought him away from Marvel. Byrne has told the story that I forget who it was that phoned him the day Jack Kirby died and said, "Well, John, I guess you're king now." And Byrne refused to take it. I mean, Kirby stays, you know, he refused to even accept that he would be in that place, but that's what other people saw him as. You know, he was in the 1980s, he was as big as Kirby.
All right.
And as far as the idea of spending $1 million for him to take over Superman, that was money well spent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it really was. And they're probably selling close to, you know, 500,000 copies a month anyway. So, one last one, his books. I never read Whipping Boy. I read Fear Book because I think that's the one, Chris, you had and you lent to me. And it was a really good horror novel, which you wouldn't expect. But how about his prose novels? He had the Whipping Boy, Fear Book, and he wrote one about Wonder Woman, one for Wonder Woman. Anybody reading these and any thoughts?
I was close to putting in Whipping Boy.
Really? I think I've only ever read Fear Book.
I enjoyed it.
I did enjoy his work.
I read Whipping Boy and Fear Book, but I haven't read them in 20 years, so.
Yeah, there's that.
That's true. But you know what? I do remember at one point somebody asking the question, do you consider yourself a writer, artist, or writer-artist? And he said writer. And to me, the fact that he wrote prose novels, horror novels even, to me really highlights that. So, all right. I think we better get out of here. And go OUT on this sucker. Find us at We Talk Podcasts, Twitter, Facebook,
iTunes, TuneIn. I don't even want to bother saying it anymore. Everybody has individual folks. You can look us up. There's bios on us on the page. You find our like Twitters and crap. I don't know. Look our names up. But just listen to the damn show and tell other people about it. Tell other people about it, damn it.
If you're not listening to the show, then
if you made it this far, number one, we're sorry.
Stand in the mall and force people to listen. Let's forget social media and have them physically force people to listen to the show.
If you can figure out how to get it onto a ghetto blaster and just do the John Cusack, moment, then that would be great.
If you want to kidnap a few people by knife point and put them in a van, drive them to your home, strap them into a basement and play all our episodes, you should. Hey, go listen to the archives of that Frank Miller episode. We looked at his whole career. We didn't do what we did here. We were much stupider then. We read everything, went through it all. It was a 7-hour podcast? But anyways, Brett, it's your topic next week. What do we got?
Oh, that's right. Well, for me, I was thinking, soundtracks have really changed the way we think about some characters. Like, I can't imagine Superman without the original movie soundtrack and stuff like that. So to me, I thought I would like to bring up some of those soundtracks and also choose some of our favorite soundtrack moments from comic book productions that maybe aren't at the top of other people's lists.
Cool. I like that. That's different. So next week
now listen to stuff while I read all these freaking burn books that I've now stacked up.
That's right. No reading involved for next week. So feel free to read on your own time.
There wasn't technically any for this week, but I think most of us did. Yeah.
I just increased my to read pile, which doesn't need any increasing.
Well, I think that's it, though, for this episode. Any last words from anybody?
Penis.